Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hello, how's Canada?
Oh, it's good, but I have to say that I'm not experiencing very much of it. It's not really like a vacation for me, so it feels very like I come and I work and I just let all of my family play with my kids and I ignore everybody. And just today my mother-in-law, my husband's up here now, my brother-in-law, his partner and their kids all went and took our kids. They all went to a water park and they went to the beach and they went to the playground and they just like went out all afternoon and I stayed here and worked. So, it is what it is, but I'm feeling a little, resentful is probably the most appropriate word. Yeah. I'm feeling like I'm missing out and it's not fun, but, book's got to go to print.
Well, I think it's better, though, as much as you might be resentful, than trying to entertain your children yourself while you're doing that. Because that's what essentially we did, is we begged people to watch our kids. But for the most part, we just kind of let, you know, video games and TV and outside as much as we could babysit our children. And we ended up feeling really awful about it at the end. So at least now, I mean, yeah, you're resentful, but your kids are
playing with their grandparents. A fantastic time. We haven't been home in 2 years and they're getting to just see everybody and, you know, not doing the big like museums and, you know, the big parks and stuff that I would probably be taking them to if I had time, but they're getting out to the beach and they're getting to the little playgrounds and they're just spending lots of quality time with their grandmothers and it's, you know, they're having a great time and it's definitely, yeah, less guilt than if I was using the television as a babysitter. So, which it is the alternative. So no, it's good, but I'm feeling, I'm editing. This is what I'm feeling. I'm feeling editing.
So you stopped to write a pretty epic post though. Want to talk about that?
I did. I got a little, sidetracked and wrote a rebuttal to an article that appeared in the most recent Weston A. Price Foundation newsletter that's called Wise Traditions. And the article was titled, I don't have it directly in front of me, so if I'm not exactly correct, I'm sure our listeners will forgive me, Myth, the Weston A. Price Foundation Diet is Like the Paleo Diet. And the article, it was actually you who sort of brought my attention to it in the first place.
My blood was boiling.
I know. That was clear. We didn't have got everyone else's blood boiling. The article, it presents a critique of the paleo diet. And in its critique, it goes point by point through all of these things that it criticizes the paleo diet for as an example of how the Weston A. Price Foundation diet is different. Spoiler alert, the critique basically presents misinformation after misinformation after misinformation about what a paleo diet is.
Yes, if the paleo diet were that diet, there wouldn't be much in common.
No, that's very true. I think what really just got all of us going was that the last two paragraphs of this article critique parents who are raising children in a paleo lifestyle as being people who are constantly saying no to their kids and depriving their kids of the modern culture of delicious food. And I took that quite personally because I really felt like it was a complete misrepresentation of what paleo families are trying to accomplish. It was insulting. It was divisive language when you're talking about something that is a diet that has an extraordinarily high amount of similarity to a paleo diet and root goals that are in common and a community where there's a lot of overlap between the Weston A. Price Foundation community and the paleo community. And so I wrote a very long post and featuring a couple of quotes, one from yours truly. And I'm hoping that people will go and just have, I've really broken down their argument and in my sort of signature balanced, let's see what the science says kind of way, and pointed out that the real myth is that the one that they're trying to put forward, that the diets are completely dissimilar, which is absolutely not true. There's a huge amount of overlap between Weston A. Price Foundation and the paleo diet. So I found the article really, it inspired me to write a monumental blog post.
I think, it inspired a lot of us. At least there were several bloggers that were talking kind of behind the scenes once we saw the article. And I think we were all really upset. Like you said, we were personally insulted. Just for the sake of clarification, I did not take the time to write an epic post because you did that for me. Diane said she was going to dedicate an entire podcast to her kind of ideas about it, which should be live right now.
It should be live by the time ours goes live.
Like, we haven't heard it, though, yesterday, because it's in a couple of days from now. But by the time this goes live, it should have been yesterday. So everybody should go check that out, because we're pretty sure that we're in alignment with what Diane's saying on that podcast, given the conversations that we've had. But I think overall, we just really felt frustrated by it. And there have been several instances where many of us bloggers have kind of reached out and tried to incorporate that community because we feel very tightly aligned. We feel like we're both from an ancestral base. Sarah, I know you and I talk a lot about principles of Weston A. Price. We incorporate
bone direct broth people to their websites all the time.
And we both believe, that green pastures fermented cod liver oil is a great source of, a supplemental food.
That's all the vitamins.
All this kind of stuff that we have in common. And it was really disappointing that where the paleo community is sharing with our community what we feel is really helpful and beneficial from the very smart people who are coming up with that in the Weston A. Price Foundation community, that the Weston A. Price Foundation community appears to be doing quite the opposite and creating a divisive role between us and saying, it is a myth that we are the same. Here's why it's not. Here's our condemning the thoughts of what is paleo, and really broke down in what felt judgmental and attacking the things about paleo that they didn't like. And,
while also putting forward a very, false impression of what paleo is. Right. So if somebody's introduction to the idea of paleo was that, newsletter article, they don't have any idea what a paleo diet is. Right. I mean, and which is what we've been talking about lately on the show. Yes. Is ties in really well with the topics we've talked about lately, about that sort of misinformation about what a paleo diet is based on some of the areas where the science isn't 100% clear. And so there's some differing opinions, and we've got some ongoing debate within the community.
Well, some of the items weren't even debatable, and some of them certainly weren't general consensus. And, you know,
in fact,
so I have two frustrations. One that we're talking about that I think Diana's covering and that you covered a bit in your post, where we're saying, I just think it's really uncool to be divisive like that. I don't think it's helping the community. I just don't. There are a lot of things that Matt and I could personally say about our own opinions on life, things that we personally believe in, but that because it's not to the benefit of the community, it's not applicable to that community, or it doesn't help the community grow, we choose to keep that to ourselves because it doesn't help anyone. And I think that there's, you know, I don't want to call myself mature because there are certain things, there are certainly things that I do that are not mature at all. But I think that when you're a responsible individual that people listen to and look to, you have a responsibility to have a sense of maturity and one, research what you're talking about. And two, if you're going to talk about it, try to at least say, these are the things that we do have in common where we do agree on. And this is why so many of our community members are actually paleo dieting, paleo diet followers. This is why Weston A. Price Foundation conferences are populated with paleo people, including speakers. These are the things that we have in common where, you know, we totally agree, and some of their leaders, you know, also promote bone broth and organ meats, and, you know, go into some of the things that a lot of us are really putting out there and that we have in common, and then say where we differ is blah, blah, blah. You know, if that's what you want to take, then fine. But I just don't think it's responsible. I don't think it's good business, and I don't think it's good for the benefit of community, and with that means everybody's health, to be so picking at the myth of paleo and why everything's not the same. So that's my one soapbox, right? The one thing that really bothered me. The second thing is exactly what bothered you. That's where my quote came from. I was really insulted and really upset by saying that the paleo leaders, one, are all single and don't have children. Two.
Keep going. Sorry.
Just fist bump from Canada. Yeah. Two, that those people who do have children are giving them some sort of social deficit and emotional disorders by not allowing them to eat junk food. And, you know, I think what infuriated me the most is, first of all, I wrote a book on how to incorporate a healthy lifestyle with children. We podcast almost every single week, and we say the words transition. We say do what works for your family. We say all these things. Chris Kresser, Rob Wolf, Mark Sisson. It's all 80-20. It's all figure out what works for you. Everybody has their own way that they say it, but every single leader in the community is saying, this is not going to be a sustainable lifestyle if you are perfect 100% of the time. And there is no way that anybody with a family could possibly attempt to, well, maybe you could. I don't think it would be healthy. I would agree with Weston A. Price to say that I don't think it would be healthy for an entire family to say, we are going to live our whole lives by these rules and we are never going to stray from them, no matter what the situation and no matter how it affects your body. Even if these foods are only, you know, mildly intolerable to you, don't even think about it. And if you don't, then, you know, you're punished. Like, if that's what a family did, probably there would be some, you know, rebellion in the later years when the children finally had access to foods, right? But for me, I have a child entering third grade who's 8 years old, and he pretty much makes his own choices at this point. When we go out to eat, he chooses to get a bunless burger and his splurges dairy. Like, he chooses to get grass-fed butter at grass-fed cheese at Elevation Burger because that's like his big splurge. Honestly, that's what I have raised my child to do, to go to a restaurant and to order a bunless grass-fed burger with grass-fed cheese, pickles, mushrooms, and lettuce. oh yeah, he's really deprived and he's really miserable that he's happily ordering this food that nourishes his body and makes him happy, makes him feel socially normal that he just ordered something at a restaurant himself that he likes. Heaven forbid he not have a bun on his burger. Okay, that's the first part. The second part is, if the argument is that paleo kids are so deprived, what part of a Weston A. Price Foundation diet isn't also depriving these children?
Because no kidding.
Yeah. From everything that I've read about Weston A. Price, if you have to sprout your grains, if you have to eat high quality, grass-fed, and raw dairy, where are you finding that in the schools? Because I'll tell you, the schools that I go to, they're given pixie sticks in math class. They're giving Skittles for English lessons. So that's no more Weston A. Price approved than anything else. If my child chooses to eat a grain-free cookie instead of the pixie sticks, wouldn't a Weston A. Price child have to do the same? It didn't even make sense to me. And it was so infuriating that, like you said, Sarah, someone who didn't know anything about the paleo diet would be exposed to this article and would just, in my opinion, completely dismiss us
as a bunch of extremists.
Yeah, a bunch of extremist crackpots or something. And I just... It was really infuriating and upsetting because I just don't feel like it helps other people, which is disappointing. To me, I feel like my mission, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to sacrifice the time that I spend with my family, the time that I have that I want to be doing other things, if I'm going to commit to this blog, it is because I want to help other people. And I just didn't feel like that article was helping anybody.
Well, and given that we have so much in common in terms of a focus on nutrient density, a focus on supporting digestion, a focus on eating snout to tail and eating variety and eating local and organic and high quality and grass fed. I mean, we have all of these things in common, and you would think that we could combine our resources to help educate, and you could educate people in the, you know, well, you know, this is all the stuff we have in common. A paleo diet, you know, avoids grains and legumes, whereas a Weston A. Price Foundation diet incorporates them when they're traditionally prepared. You know, to me, that's a small difference when you look at everything that is in common. And, you know, I think that you could reach so many more people by pooling our influence and pooling our resources and working together for, you know, the greater good of, you know, the nutrient density of the American diet. And instead, you know, they just seem to really want to separate themselves from the paleo movement. And I don't understand where that would come from, if that comes from just a misunderstanding of what the paleo diet is and what this community is about, or if it comes from some kind of ulterior motive, some kind of marketing strategy. I mean, I don't know, because it's so beyond my ability to fathom why somebody would reject the opportunity to help more people because they don't want, you know, to collaborate with a particular community that has so much in common. Like, it just, to me, it doesn't make sense. And I'm sure at some point the real story will come out and we'll find out what this is all really about. But it was, I just found like this, the whole not hinting out, like outright saying, and I actually quote the relevant paragraph in my post, that, you know, if you were a Weston A. Price Foundation diet, you would be, you know, allowing your children to experience, you know, grains and dairy, because we have this grain and dairy centered culture, by giving them sourdough bread that you've made yourself and you've fermented the grains yourself, and by giving them homemade ice cream. So my almond flour bread and my homemade coconut milk ice cream are somehow not, you know, providing the same, you know, emotional, you know, fun, fitting in, you know, the thing that theirs is. Like, it's
never mind the health benefits that our children have seen by removing casein from their diet. Like,
well, my youngest is extraordinarily sensitive to casein, like crazy sensitive, and has really like, you know, thinking about dialing 911 type reactions to it. And, you know, it's a toxin for her. And, you know, my oldest, she tolerates it from time to time, and it's fine. And she can have dairy for a treat. And, you know, I just don't keep it in the house, because literally a few days ago, my youngest ate a bite of food that touched a piece of Parmesan cheese. I took the Parmesan off, and she had obstructive sleep apnea from acid reflux caused by her dairy intolerance because of that. Like, she can't have ghee because of the trace proteins. And it just, it infuriates me that my trying to find a way to raise my children in a healthy way where they don't feel like they're different or missing out on something. Like, I work really hard to make them feel included in their community and their society, even though they eat differently than most of their peers. And they eat differently. You know, really, my kids have really, really legitimate sensitivities to these foods. And it just, I don't even know if I mean, I guess I sort of got all my expressions out in my blog post. It's really hard for me to explain how personal that statement was and how that just was like getting punched in the stomach. Like, it was, you know, it was so insulting to be told that basically I'm a bad parent because I care about the nutrient density of my children's diets and that I care that, that they are eating the best possible, foods and choices, you know, for them, that works for them, that finds that balance for them between nourishing their bodies and also, you know, allowing them to be kids and fit in. Like, I know you felt the same. But it just, it was a very, as we've already said, it was a very divisive, article, and I don't know where it came from. But I wrote a very substantial blog post in rebuttal to it.
I completely agree with everything you just said. And I also want people to understand that this is not the first time that the paleo community has experienced this attitude from Westney Price. It's just the first time that it's been so public and so clearly explained and shared with the community that we felt like we needed to respond back because it wasn't okay just left as it was. So, you know, if people are like, oh, well, maybe one person wrote this article and it wasn't, you know, edited properly and it's just, you know, one person's perception that accidentally got shared, I can tell you that that is absolutely not the case, that there are very many of us that have communicated with one another and have all had individual experiences similar to this sort of divisive attitude and, you know, some sort of preconceived notion of what paleo is without wanting any sort of further discussion or explanation on that. And so I just want people to know that we're not just taking like one thing and running with it and assuming the worst. This is definitely something that we've seen and experienced multiple times through, you know, being leaders in the movement and the community and kind of having interactions with one another and kind of, you know, walking away dumbfounded, not knowing really quite what just happened or what to do about it. And finally something happened that sparked us all enough to to get our panties in a wad. Yeah. So
yeah,
with that,
I think
we're all ramped up and ready for some philosophical discussion.
I think we're, you know, 20 minutes into our philosophical debate.
Cool. So, we're just going to kick off where we started last week, and you might be saying to yourself, wait a minute, I thought you said Amy Kubal was coming up with blood sugar regulation, and you, my friend, would be right. However, the world is just not in our favor, and dear Amy Kubal will not be available till after the Ancestral Health Symposium, where we might be able to cross our fingers and once again record the show that we already recorded last month that Skype chose to not give us. So, in the meantime, we actually got really good positive feedback off of part one, and we thought we were going to space them out, but...
Well, and really, at this rate, it could be like a seven-parter, so...
So
we just, an ongoing
we just
series.
Rename the show Paleo Philosophies.
That'd be awesome.
It is the paleo view. This is our view on stuff. So I think it's
oh, it's essential. Perfect.
Yeah. Cool. So we left off last week, kind of closing on the carbohydrate debate and saying we were going to kind of touch on dairy and stuff.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this show and have not yet listened to episode 48, I'm going to say that it is a must listen. We rarely tell you that you have to listen to something else. Usually we'll reference other shows, but we talked a lot about our basic impressions, referencing other material, a lot of where we're coming from with some of the other things that we're going to talk about in this show are in the base of episode 48. So rather than bore everyone with rehash this every episode, I'm just going to tell everyone who's listening to this episode for the first time, we've never done this before, but we really encourage you to go listen to 48 before you listen to this show.
So let's talk about fat, because I mean, I know we'll talk about dairy too this episode, but let's start with fat just because I feel like it's a really topical discussion because
really?
Of the Leukemia Price Foundation newsletter article, because one of their criticisms is that we don't eat fat because we only eat lean meats, and there's this like lean meat bias, and then the only fats we eat are like low omega-6 plant fats like coconut oil and olive oil, and let's like bust that myth right from the start.
I wrote a book about lard, so pretty sure everybody knows my opinion on fat. So I'll take it one step further and say that, even as someone with a removed gallbladder, for example, when I was eating that higher omega-6 fat the first year that I was paleo, and I was eating a high protein, low carb, low fat approach to paleo, which is what I think Weston A. Price Foundation kind of thinks that this diet is, and I just wasn't educated. And I went to a Balance Bites seminar and I learned about good, healthy fats. And I learned that the kind of fats that your body digests the best are monounsaturated fats in particular, because mono means it's just one, hoping I'm going to get this right, molecule. It's one strand, and it's easier to go through your body than if it's an oil, then it's poly, which means more than one, and it bends and it's more difficult for your body. So for me, I learned about how difficult it was for my body, especially without having a gallbladder, to digest polyunsaturated fats. Is that, am I, give me a nod.
Yeah. Let me get geeky.
All right.
And interrupt you. Okay. So there's three fats are sort of given one of these three broad classifications: saturated, monounsaturated, and polyunsaturated. What fats are is they are molecules that are technically alcohols, and they're made up of these just long chains of carbon atoms strung together, and carbon atoms like to share electrons with other molecules. That's what forms the bonds between carbon and other atoms in a molecule. And they like to share four electrons. So what happens in these chains of carbon atoms that form a fat is you have all of these carbons sharing one electron with each other. And then the other spots where they would like to share an electron is shared with a hydrogen. So you get this long straight chain of carbon atoms with little hydrogens off the sort of top and bottom. On either end, like bookends, one end just has an extra hydrogen atom taking that spot where an electron should be. And the other end has what is the molecule that makes it an alcohol. And the length of the chain, like how many carbon atoms, is what determines exactly what fat it is. What makes the difference between a saturated fat and a mono or poly unsaturated fat is those bonds between the carbon atoms. So in a saturated fat, every single bond between every single carbon atom, and there might be you know, 18, 20, 25, 30 carbon atoms in these long chains. Every bond is a single bond, and that means one electron is shared between these two carbon atoms. In a monounsaturated fat, one bond between two carbon atoms is replaced by a double bond. A double bond means that those two carbon atoms are sharing two electrons, and that actually means that there's less space for hydrogen atoms. So it makes a saturated fat saturated is there are no double bonds, all single bonds. That actually means it's saturated with hydrogen. It has the most possible number of hydrogen atoms in the molecular structure as you can fit. A monounsaturated fat has one double bond where it can't have hydrogen atoms. So it actually loses two hydrogen atoms, like one from each side of that bond. And it also puts a little bit of a kink into the fat. In a polyunsaturated fat, there are two or more double bonds. So there's two or more places where you're losing hydrogen and you're not as saturated in hydrogen. And since we're here, the difference between an omega-3 and an omega-6 polyunsaturated fat is actually the position of the first double bond when you're counting down the chain. So in an omega-3 polyunsaturated fat, the first double bond is between the third and fourth carbon atoms. And in omega-6, the first double bond is between the sixth and seventh carbon atoms. And in omega-9, it's between the ninth and tenth carbon atoms. And that just changes the whole structure. And the more double bonds you have, the more ways that fat can kink. Some of them can make little, almost like rings, like little, you know, really tight little C's that bend in on themselves. They can bend in really different ways. And that changes the chemistry of how that fat is behaves in the body. And so it actually turns out that a saturated fat is the easiest fat for the body to burn as energy. It can basically just be, you know, quickly broken down and used as energy without any modification. The body has to handle those double bonds, and it actually has to get rid of them. So in order for a mono or polyunsaturated fat to be used as energy, it has to go through an enzymatic reaction where the body takes out those double bonds first, and it slows the process down. I mean, there's other ways that other roles that fats can have in the body that don't require this breaking things down and using for energy. But that's how these fats have such different effects in human physiology. So saturated has no double bonds, monounsaturated has one, polyunsaturated has two or more, and they can all be different lengths. I mean, there are like really literally dozens of different fatty acids. But that's how they are. That's how they fit into those sort of three broad groups. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that's totally what I was saying, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my point was, since we're talking about fats and paleo, is that because I don't have a gallbladder, I find it much easier to digest the fats that are saturated and monounsaturated because my body doesn't have to work as hard to use them or break them down or whatever. And so I went from being this perceived, you know, what Liz Wolf calls coconut oil, broccoli, and chicken breast paleo person to being a lard, tallow, paleo person. And that's really when I started to get into nutrient density because I realized that I was nutrient malabsorbed and I needed to focus on nutrient density to get my body absorbing more nutrients. We can reference the show that we had Diana Rogers on where I learned all that stuff. I started taking supplements. I started eating different foods and lo and behold, my nails stopped being weak and my hair stopped falling out and my skin improved because I started actually absorbing nutrients. So not only are we as a community interested in, you know, eating the fats of healthy animals because they have omega-3 and CLA and all those things, but even more so than that I think goes above and beyond what I've, you know, heard from my Weston A. Price readings and interpretations is that the paleo diet or ancestral eating or wellness or whatever we're calling this, really encourages people to find out what works for them and how to get their body in an optimal state in terms of, you know, not just performance, not just weight loss, but really how to be healthy. And that includes, for me, needing to eat saturated fats. So for me, the idea that someone could perceive this to be a low-fat, high omega-6 type diet is absolutely preposterous.
It's like, yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to me because it's absolutely not.
And I think there's actually probably a bigger community within the paleo community that is actually, you know, going really low carb and going really high fat and doing like nutritional ketosis approaches than there is the other extreme of eating a low fat paleo diet. I think there's probably more people doing the like super high fat version of a paleo diet compared to, you know, chicken breast and broccoli and coconut oil. Like it just, to me, it's really funny when I hear that it's a low fat diet. But I think part of that is, comes from that there is still so much misinformation about how fats interact with our health out there. I mean, there are still so many people who think that eating cholesterol will give you heart disease, that don't know the difference between eating cholesterol and eating saturated fat, that eating saturated fat will give you heart disease, that having high blood cholesterol is because you ate saturated fat. I mean, all of these things have been known in the scientific literature, in the science community, to be false for 15 years. And in the general public, I mean, people are still really scared of eating fat. And it's just, I mean, when I grab a spoon of lard out of the jar to cook with it, I lick the spoon. That stuff is yummy. And I just go, vitamins A, D, and K2. I just, you know, I get, it's so different from the perception. And it's so different from just public awareness of how important it is to be eating not just more saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, and more omega-3 fats compared to omega-6, but also high-quality fats that have vitamin, like fat-soluble vitamin content. And when I was doing the research for my book, the like most important micronutrients that people are deficient in that seems to be really strongly linked to autoimmune disease were the fat-soluble vitamins. And that becomes from us not eating enough fat, because you need to eat fat in order to get fat-soluble vitamins and in order to be able to absorb those vitamins. But it also comes from eating the wrong kinds of fats. It comes from eating fats that don't have those vitamins in it. And so I think it's such a different perception of just like what's healthy compared to what, you know, really we know from the science really is healthy. So, if anybody listening to our podcast is scared of eating fat, don't be. It's good for you. Go eat some lard.
And more importantly, from a philosophical standpoint, it is not true that paleo is a low-fat or, you know, high omega-6 diet. In fact, we would say that we focus on the opposite. So incorporate healthy fats as much as it can. Well, that's only, you know, 40 minutes of a show right there.
So we have time for dairy.
This is really sad. Okay.
So, no, you know what's going to happen is every time we do a paleo philosophy show, we're going to increase the number of parts of the series. So when we started, we're like, this will be a 2 or 3 part series. And today we're like, yeah, maybe this will be like a 6 or 7 part series. And then next time we do one, we'll be like, this is going to be a 23 part series.
We're going to dedicate, you know, 26 half a episodes, year. Half a year. We won't, people. We're tangenty, but we're not that bad. We can
spread this out. This can be just like a fun thematic thing that we do now. Right? Can we?
I got a philosophical thought on just about everything, so we can surely spread it out.
We should rename them the Soapbox Show.
Totally. Okay. So I'll start with dairy, because I feel like from my journey has been interesting, and it's probably time for confession. We talked about on the autoimmune show with Mickey how I had reincorporated dairy fat successfully, which is really exciting for me. And the reason that that's exciting is because I actually came to paleo from being dairy free, as most people probably know, and have always had a problem with dairy my entire life, to the point where, you know, when I'm breastfeeding babies, even butter in food causes my babies to get colic. Like, that's how bad my intolerance was. So with healing my body through this, you know, autoimmune protocol and nutrient dense approach to eating, I have been able to successfully reincorporate dairy fats into my diet. Now, in the beginning of my paleo journey, you can find a post on our site where we talk about it's not natural for people to eat the breast milk of other animals. And I still kind of feel that way. But I also have read Practical Paleo. I've also researched Restine Price. I've also talked with you, Sarah, for an extensive amount of time. And I know how very nutrient-dense grass-fed dairy fat is. And I know that if I am able to properly tolerate dairy fat, that it can actually be a really good source of nutrients. And because I was focusing on nutrient density, I thought of it like a superfood, the way that I think of pastured egg yolks and liver. It is really high in a lot of nutrients when you're using the right source. And so when we started reincorporating grass-fed butter into my foods, and I started having grass-fed heavy cream, I honestly saw improvement in my skin. I saw improvement in my joints and things that before dairy actually caused a problem. So for me, my paleo philosophy on dairy is very different than it would have been 3 years ago. And I think that, you know, it's really all perception. I don't think that my family will ever be consuming high quantities of dairy. My children are all very sensitive to it. Even if we use butter regularly in the house, my children will start exhibiting behavioral problems, like control with their body, and it can almost always be linked back to dairy for them. So, you know, we definitely walk that fine line between respecting it as a nutrient-dense food, and that's why we're adding it. And also it's tasty and we enjoy it, but I'm not going to do that at the sacrifice of the health and wellness of my family, which is where I think you come from with dairy, and where I still come from. Yeah. On, you know, with my oldest, is kind of like your oldest. He can have dairy as a treat, but even though there's butter and heavy cream in the house, he knows that's like for cooking, and they don't think about it or want it. Like, it's not something they would never say, oh, can I put heavy cream on my paleo crunch? Like, you know, it's not even like something.
Wait, that sounds good.
I know, right? As soon as I said that, I'm like, no. I actually got fresh. I got fresh peaches from a farm yesterday. We went and picked peaches, and I told Matt, it's all I've been doing is thinking about having a bowl of cut up fresh peaches with some heavy cream on top, because I started a sugar detox, but not like very similar to the 21-day sugar detox, but I'm not giving up fruit because it's summertime and that gives me disordered eating. So I'm not doing any sort of sweetened treats. I want to get into competition form. We didn't talk about this in the beginning, but I actually want to like start weight training and potentially do competitions next year.
That's so awesome.
I know. So that means that I want to get down to a certain weight class. And so that means I'm not going to diet. I'm not going to do extreme things, but that means I need to start sleeping better and I need to start eating better. So,
sleeping is the biggest key.
I know. So I'm really excited to have a reason to say, no, I have to go to bed at this certain time because I need to get into competition health. Because I'm like, I'm a driven person. I need something to like drive me towards something. Anyway.
Something that drives you to go to bed earlier is an awfully good thing.
I thought you would support my endeavors. So
yeah.
Bringing it back around.
I would
around,
ever not, but yeah.
Yes. So bringing it back around, my paleo philosophy is migrating, much like we talked about in the last episode, my thoughts on dairy and if and how it should or shouldn't be consumed are definitely different based on my new understanding of nutrient density than they were before. Now, that's not to say that I can't find these nutrients in other food, and then we're definitely still finding those nutrients in other food and incorporating it into our diet. Organ meat, I'm sure, Sarah, you'll talk about, but I'm at a new phase in my paleo journey where I no longer have problems digesting this food, and being that it is a nutrient dense source that I enjoy eating, I'm going to continue to enjoy it in moderation. So that's my growing, expanding, ever-changing.
I think that's awesome. I think maybe just to talk a little bit more broadly about dairy in the paleo community, you know, I think that there is some, you know, research to show some reasons to be cautious, but that research pretty much is when you're talking about pasteurized dairy, or when you're talking about, you know, there are some reasons to be cautious about dairy proteins. When you talk about dairy fat, I mean, that's just a really, from grass-fed animals, a really healthful, vitamin-rich fat. And when you talk about full-fat dairy, like heavy cream or full-fat sour cream, you know, you're talking about, you know, low enough protein that you know, for people who aren't sensitive to those proteins, who don't have allergies or food intolerances to them, you're talking about a food that really has just overwhelming nutrient value, you know, compared to, you know, the amount of protein that's in that food. As you get like leaner and leaner dairy, even when you're talking about grass-fed dairy, if you start talking about low-fat grass-fed dairy, I'm like, well, what's the point in getting grass-fed? You're getting rid of all the good stuff. But, you know, even when you start talking about like raw whole milk from grass-fed cows, there's still a lot of good stuff in there. There's still some stuff in there that may cause problems, and there just isn't really solid science to kind of decipher, just let you, you know, categorize it. So you kind of have this like pros and cons list, and there's no science that tells you that this pro is worth 3 points and this con is worth 2 points. So the pro wins. Like, we just don't know that. And that's why these issues are so, not debated, although there is a bit of a debate within the paleo community about the role of dairy, but it's more that you see, you know, variation in how people are approaching this. And you'll have, you know, people who typically identify themselves as primal or lacto-paleo who, you know, fully incorporate dairy into their daily lives. I mean, maybe they're using a lot of fermented dairy and that gets rid of a lot of lactose, and then you get great probiotics at the same time. Or maybe you have, like, you know, your family who's just using, well, not like my family. I mean, we have some grass-fed butter around, and that's, and some ghee, and that's pretty much it. My husband puts heavy cream into his coffee. And then we have the, you know, very occasional treat that might be something like raw grass-fed cheese or ice cream. But only for half the family, because the other two of us don't tolerate it. So, you know, there's this huge range of how people are incorporating or not incorporating dairy into their lives. And I think it's really important to emphasize that, you know, it seems to all work. Like, people do really, really well. Some people do really, really well on dairy. Some people do really, really well with no dairy. And it's far more important to find what is working for you as an individual. There's that balance between, you know, eating a nutrient-dense food that's going to support your physical health. There's that balance between the emotional aspect of eating a food that you really love. There's the, you know, different qualities of dairy. It makes a big difference when you're getting high-quality dairy. Then there's the, you know, for people who are interested in raw milk versus vat pasteurized milk. We've talked about this on our dairy show. There's sort of the pros and cons of the risk of infection versus the beneficial enzyme deactivation that happens when you pasteurize. There's so much going on in terms of an individual's choice about whether or not they're going to consume dairy that it really needs to be just that, an individual's choice. And I think that, you know, as a paleo community, we sometimes get really focused on the rules. And we always get focused on the no rules. no grains, no legumes, no dairy, no processed and refined foods. And we just, you know, we just have this like list of things that we don't eat. And we forget that, you know, some of these foods are potentially really nutrient dense foods. And I think that, you know, as the paleo diet evolves, I know that's kind of like funny to say, but yeah, but like as we learn more about how food affects our bodies, how food affects our genes and the proteins that our bodies make. I mean, there's a lot going on in terms of how the food we eat interacts with our body. We're going to be able to really narrow down some of these foods, you know, in terms of are they beneficial, are they not? Maybe we'll be able to say they're beneficial for this group of people and not for this group of people. I mean, we may be able to know exactly, you know, whether or not person A can eat butter and person B can eat, you know, I don't know, kefir. And we're going to be able to potentially have a lot more information, but that's still probably a few decades off in terms of our understanding of nutritional sciences and not just nutritional sciences, but nutritional genomics and really how food interacts with our genes, because it really does. And it's a fascinating field. And if I could go back and do my PhD over again, that's what I would do it in. And
what, you don't have time for another PhD?
Oh, please. I could just write a book about it and teach it to myself. Okay, sorry. Books. But, you know, I think what I want to emphasize with this discussion is that there's no right answer for the role that dairy plays in our diets. And it's really about finding what works for you. And I think that putting the paleo diet as a dairy-free diet as a soundbite, it's a really fast description. And I think it's great when people are starting off to start off dairy-free, because dairy intolerance is very common and you won't know if you're intolerant unless you give it up for a little while. But as a blanket rule that we should be giving up dairy, I don't agree with that. I think that it has some really great nutritional value. And I, you know, for me, it's all about nutrient density and avoiding foods that cause, you know, gut health problems and inflammation. And so, I think, you know, I think there's a role for especially dairy, you know, quality dairy fat in our diets. Soapbox.
I think that we could potentially close up this topic with maybe a quick discussion on fruit and sugar, which also kind of ties to the discussion that we were having earlier about paleo treats and transition. You wanna go for it?
I could literally talk about this subject for an entire show.
And I think we have, and that's why I think it's better if we just try to, well, at least I'll try to keep my perception quick. And I would say you're probably going to cite several or be able to talk about the science of why fruit is not the same detriment to health as refined white sugar or even other sugars. And I don't think that anyone in the paleo community believes that eating sweet treat foods are health promoting. So when you're talking about, is something paleo? You know, I defined my personal paleo in episode 48 by saying it's grain free, it's legume free, it's
pasteurized dairy free.
Sorry, oh my goodness. Maybe we don't have time to do 10 more minutes. And I said it's refined sugar free. So for me, that means that if dairy is coming from a high quality source and I'm not kind of going crazy with it, it's still paleo in my opinion, because my body handles it. So does Matt's. So does Wesley's. The two older boys have some issues in depending on the type and form. And it's the same thing with sugar, right? If I give my children high fructose corn syrup, they go crazy. And I mean, to the point where it's on the official banned list at the same level as gluten, because it just, it does something to their body that is frightening. And I don't need zombie children. I don't need that. So for me, you know, we try to avoid those seriously refined sugars, but that doesn't mean that we aren't enjoying treats in respect of them being just that, treats. I would never define, let's say, you know, cupcakes with icing where you're using coconut sugar or something like that, even though it's coconut sugar, or let's say it's even honey or maple syrup, depending on what camp you're in. Maybe you have a problem with coconut sugar. No matter what sugar you're talking about, I would never define that as being quote unquote paleo. And when you see food bloggers, because this is the common flack that we get, when you see food bloggers say something like paleo cupcakes, well, first of all, I think both Sarah, you and I don't use those terms.
I do.
But
I do. No, I definitely, if I make a cupcake recipe, I'll call it a paleo cupcake.
So, but the reason that that's happening is because it's a search term for Google. Yeah. It's not to say this is paleo, eat it every day, all day. It's because nobody looking for a birthday cupcake that is grain-free, legume-free, refined sugar-free, pasteurized dairy-free is going to put in all those search terms and come up with Sarah's cupcakes if she doesn't say paleo cupcake. Now, I have the benefit of having a website that straight in the search term, it's called Paleo Parents, and therefore I have a benefit. I don't have to put paleo cupcake every time I make one because Google says, oh, it's already paleo. So if you put in cupcake and you put in paleo, it's automatically going to return to you all of my cupcakes because I'm already paleo to Google. Great. I think people get caught around the axle of it's inappropriate to call paleo marshmallows paleo because they're simply made out of, you know, sugar. And like, okay, first of all, there's also gelatin in there. But second of all,
glycine rich. something. You totally want marshmallows. Yeah. I'm hungry. It's supper time.
But second of all, how else is anybody going to find the non-refined sugar corn syrup version of that if someone doesn't say paleo? It's just, you know, so with that, I, you know, my paleo philosophy is these are treats. And you might see on different paleo blogs, people post things. Even something as like our Facebook wall, right? We have sharing going on of older posts because some people are new to the wall. They've never seen a post and it's helpful for them for us to share old recipes. It's also helpful for us that we don't have to invent a new recipe every day. We can just share one people haven't seen before. And when they come up, it's like, oh my gosh, you guys eat so many treats. No wonder you have problems, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I didn't eat that treat today. I didn't eat a treat yesterday. I'm not going to eat a treat tomorrow. Just because you see something on the wall doesn't mean that, you know, someone is shoving their face full of an entire batch of cookies. Sometimes we make treats and we send it to school with our kids and we don't even have one of those cookies, but I might take a picture and I might post it on my blog. You know, like it's just,
yeah, we did the same thing. I mean, like we, you know, very rarely actually, you know, I will do recipe development for a recipe. And while I'm doing recipe development, I'm giving away, you know, food as long as it's not horrible, you know, to every single person who comes to my door. Like, it's just, you know,
hey, mailman, want some paleo cupcakes?
I have done that. It's just, you know, like, that's when I start bringing stuff over to the neighbor's house because we don't eat that much. If we eat that much of these treats, we don't feel good. I mean, all of us don't feel good. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll put it in the freezer and save it for a rainy day. You know, I haven't made something in a month, you know, here, how about we pull out these, you know, three, you know, chocolate chip oatmeal cookies that have no oatmeal in them, but they taste like oatmeal cookies. You know, it's just, you know, for us, that's exactly that. It's a treat. And I call a lot of my baked goods, paleo, whatever, on my site. And it's just to label it so that people can find it. And it's just a more efficient label than labeling it gluten-free, grain-free, dairy-free, refined sugar-free, you know, refined vegetable oil-free, processed food-free, you know, coloring dye-free, soy-free. Certainly if it's nut-free, I label that in addition because there's definitely a number of people who are looking for nut-free paleo recipes, or if it's autoimmune protocol, and I label that in addition. But, you know, I just don't – I don't see what the big deal is. You know, I think that people get really, passionate that a paleo diet should look like what cavemen ate and that we shouldn't even eat anything that is an imitation of a Neolithic food because that's somehow cheating. And, you know, for me,
if caveman entered a strawberry field, like that caveman is shoving all of those strawberries into his face.
Yep.
Not that this is a recreation, but even if you wanted to believe that this was a recreation, because a lot of people are fruit phobic and you have to limit your fruits and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what? If caveman came upon it, I guarantee you he was eating
they
it.
They ate all of it. And you know, the other thing is, I had this dog growing up and this is like not a tangent, I promise.
Don't make promises you can't do.
Okay. Excellent point. This is a complete tangent and I promise never to get back to the point. So our yard was lined with plum trees and they weren't the greatest plums. So we didn't really eat them. We had one plum tree that the plums actually tasted good. The rest, we just let the plums fall and the plums would fall and then they would ferment. And our dog would wait for them to be fermented and then go around and eat all of the fermented fruit and get stinking drunk. And I refuse to believe that cavemen did not also do this. Like, I think that, you know, they would have completely binged on whatever was plentiful in because it was there and you don't know when you're going to be without. I'm sure that if they found a beehive, they would have eaten every ounce of honey in that beehive, but then they might not have found another beehive for a few months. I'm sure they ate fermented fruit, you know, which would have been sort of late summer. And I just feel like, you know, this focus on, but that looks like a pizza and pizza's bad. I don't think it's a healthy approach to food. It's basically swinging the pendulum in the other direction and swing from like, don't care what you put in your mouth and don't have any appreciation for how that's going to affect your health to, you know, restricting foods that can be very healthful foods just because they look like something that's unhealthy. I mean, it's like a food prejudice.
Yeah. And I 100% agree with what you're saying right now. And I want to articulate that a lot of the foods that you're referring to aren't even what most people would refer to as treats because they're made with no sweeteners at all. So something like a crepe made with coconut flour and egg yolk. And suddenly, because it looks like a crepe, is now no longer allowable because it looks like a certain food. Or something like a cauliflower crust pizza dough, which is made with a vegetable, is suddenly now not allowed because it looks like something else. To me, that gets into the topic of orthorexia and, you know, disordered eating. Because if we are truly a community focused on nourishing our bodies with nutrient-dense foods, there is absolutely nothing wrong with eating coconut flour, egg yolk, crepes, and there's certainly nothing wrong with eating something with a base of cauliflower, meat, and vegetables on top. Like, it baffles me. So I'm with you, and I want to specify that we're talking now about different kinds of quote-unquote treats than, like, sweetened fruit treats as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I guess there's two discussions there. There's the discussion of foods that mimic Neolithic foods, and there's discussion of foods that, you know, legitimately are not as nutrient dense as other choices and maybe have a little bit more of a sugar content or you know, sugar and fat, the lovely combination that is. And, you know, I think maybe that's somewhere where we could pick up next time.
Because I think, too, that kind of brings us full circle with the reference to the Weston A. Price Foundation article saying that we're not enjoying ice cream.
Ice cream.
Yes, we are. In fact, I have a recipe on my website using Sally Fallon's own chicken eggs. So I can tell you that we enjoy ice cream. Most of the time it's made with coconut milk, but there's nothing wrong with that either. That's a really health-promoting, you know, good for your gut, good fat, go for it. And understand that if you're adding sweetener, it's a treat. You know, like, just define your paleo how you want to define your paleo, but don't judge somebody else for what they choose to do. Again, don't tell them what they should or shouldn't do. Maybe say, I think you might be addicted to treats. Maybe try to go without them for 30 days. Because that's what I'm doing right now. I have a problem. The book stress, Matt and I were both like, oh, we're going to eat late at night. We're going to stay up late. You know, all these things crept into the house, bad habits, and now it's time to, you know, pay the piper and, you know, we got to create new habits again. And that means no treats at all because one bad decision leads to another.
That's a whole podcast topic right there too.
Indeed. So, well, I'm happy we rounded out number one of, hold on, let me tell our listeners, you have 14 items on this sheet. And after two episodes,
we've covered number two. This was number two. We've covered two in two episodes.
We covered number one and two in two episodes. So with that math, we would be done in seven, but hopefully number one and two.
We would be done in 14. We covered two in two episodes. There's 14
points. Oh, geez. You're right. So, but these were our biggest. So hopefully.
They were. It'll get easier. I don't think it's going to be a three-parter, but, you know, it's fun and the feedback's been good. And we will try and break this up with some other stuff in the meantime.
So knowing that we're doing this series, if you have specific topics that you would like us to cover on the philosophical perspective
and turn it into a 20-part series,
please feel free to submit those kind of general inquiries to the podcast question box. There's a link in the show notes as well as on both of our sites. And please don't forget, if you're enjoying the show, to leave us a review on iTunes. It is awesome, and we love you for it, and we read every single one and really appreciate all the nice things that you say. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's a wrap.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I'm sorry about all the noise.
Yeah, whatever, you're in Canada.